Welcome to the Hey Boomer Podcast, the Facebook Live show that inspires boomers to recognize their own strengths and relevance through thought-provoking conversations with extraordinary guests. Today we're talking voting. My name is Wendy Green, and I am your host for Hey Boomer.
Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. Thank you for joining today, and we are going to talk about voting. So I have been a registered voter since I turned 18. My family was a very politically active family, and I was very excited about registering to vote and getting involved in that political process. But as I researched for my presentation today or my discussion today with Lawson Wetley, I realized there was quite a bit that I did not know about voting. So I think everybody is going to learn something today that they may not have already known. For instance, when I moved to South Carolina from Virginia, I learned that I could vote in either primary, even if I was registered one party or the other. I had never lived in a state where that was possible. It's the same with the absentee voting. I learned in South Carolina, you have to have an excuse to vote absentee. In many other states, that is not a requirement. So I think there's going to be more to learn, more insights, but let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. Lawson Wetley is a longtime Greenvillian and an attorney with a practice area focused on corporate, transactional, and securities law. Lawson received her JD from Columbia University School of Law, and she worked in New York City before moving to Greenville and practicing with the Weish Law Firm for a number of years. She currently practices with the Entrepreneurs Law Group. As a volunteer, Lawson is committed to helping people connect to their power as voters and as members of the civic body. Among Lawson's current volunteer roles, she serves as co-president of the League of Women Voters of Greenville County. She is the voter registration chair of the Greenville branch of the NAACP, and she is a member of the board of the Greenville County Redevelopment Authority and of the Upstate Mediation Center. We will talk to Lawson in just a minute. But first, I want to remind you of a couple of things. With Hey Boomer, we are building a community of people who still have a lot to give, who still want to be involved and share some of their life experiences with their families, with their communities, and maybe even with the world. Every week, I am privileged to bring you amazing guests who talk to us about important topics and inspiring topics. And I want you to be part of this community. That is why I am launching the Patreon link, which you see on your screen right there. This will give you early access to blog posts. It will give you thank you shout outs on some of the episodes, and the ability to join our monthly community meetings, which is a new thing that we're going to be starting. I also want you to be part of the conversation. So feel free to use the chat box to send questions, comments, thoughts, and encouragement. Be part of the Hey Boomer community. Engage with us. So now I would like to introduce you to Lawson. Hi, Lawson.
Hey, Wendy. Thank you so much for having me.
It is so good to have you here. Thank you. There's so much that I want to talk about. There's so much going on in the world of voting. But one thing I'd like to start with is by reflecting on some of the history that has gotten us to where we are today. Mm-hmm. So the 15th Amendment, which was ratified in 1870, said the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. 40 years later, in 1920, we passed and ratified the 19th Amendment. And that said, the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex. So those amendments covered sex, race, color. And yet we still needed the Voting Rights Act in 1965. What did we miss with those constitutional amendments?
I think what we missed when it comes to race and racial oppression was an effective, true dismantlement of the system. So if you look at what, I mean, so just for example, with gender, once gender was removed as a restriction from voting with the 19th Amendment, it has not since been a true restriction from voting. And where you had the rollback, it was specifically about race. So when you look at the 15th Amendment, that was intended to have the impact of removing race restrictions from voting, what you found was power does not give itself up easily. The people with power don't give up the power easily. And as I think we all know, but just as a refresher for those of us where middle school is, middle school civics is not that recent, in the beginning in the United States, it was only white male property owners who were able to vote. So that's where we started. And the history of the expansion of suffrage has been, incremental fits and starts, steps forward, steps back. And nowhere is that more true than when it comes to race. So even though the 15th Amendment purported to remove racial restrictions, what happened in specifically in the South, which was where the vast majority of African Americans were living in the United States up, into the early 20th century, what you found was that the people, the white supremacist structure that had power sought for and found ways of disenfranchising Black Americans that, didn't use the words race in it, didn't say, well, you can't vote because you're Black. It's, well, you can't vote because your grandfather couldn't vote. The grandfather clause, right? There were, the literacy tests and the poll taxes and all of those vote suppressive impacts, none of them used the word race. And so for people who wanted to go along with, what essentially, as we know, was racial apartheid enforced by vote suppression, it didn't use the word race, but it effectively was racist. And so that's why we needed the Voting Rights Act to do it. In order to, be more specific, like, no, actually, these literacy tests and, poll taxes are intended to and have the effect of disenfranchising Black Americans.
An act needs to be renewed every so often, right? Mm-hmm. And so, since this was passed in 1965, it has been renewed several times. And then in 2013, the Supreme Court ruled that they basically struck down part of this Voting Rights Act, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. part that required states to get federal approval before mm-hmm. changing their election laws.
So, pre-clearance.
Yeah. So what has been the impact of that?
Mm-hmm. So I think just thinking about laws in general, so the Voting Rights Act, I think it itself by its terms needs to be renewed. You figure it's not the case that a law necessarily needs to be, but the Voting Rights Act does. So when the Voting Rights Act was put in place, it was put in place with the understanding that there were states in this union that had a long, deep history of disenfranchising Black Americans. And so those states, the states that had that history, needed to jump through an extra hoop. And that extra hoop was if they were going to put changes, changes to voting rights, they needed to get preclearance. They needed to run it past the Justice Department first. And that itself, that preclearance hurdle proved to be a substantially effective way of blocking a lot of vote suppressive measures. And when the Supreme Court in Shelby v. Holder effectively removed that preclearance requirement, what you saw was states, I mean, including states that had that long history and also including other states that also want to do vote suppression, like, for example, Wisconsin, I mean, just absolutely jumped at all kinds of measures that have vote suppressive effects, like voter ID laws, like reducing polling locations. I saw something recently that really struck me, and it said that whenever we have vote suppressive measures, they always, to some people, just look like procedure, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they never, you know, it is very much a wolf, vote suppression is very much a wolf in sheep's clothing type of thing, because it always covers itself in some kind of language like voter fraud, you know, which is not a thing. But it, right, it never just comes out and says, here's what we want fewer people to vote. It's just measures that have the effect of fewer people, especially young people and Black and brown people, voting and, you know, claiming to be just procedure or voting integrity.
Well, and the gerrymandering too, that was part of it, right? Where they redistricted things. So some people started to feel like, well, my vote's not going to matter anyway, because I'm in the minority in this voting area.
Gerrymandering, right. Yeah. Oh, gerrymandering is absolutely a huge problem. And one thing that does remain the case, the Voting Rights Act continues to prohibit gerrymandering that has the intention or the effect of diluting votes of racial minorities, ethnic minorities, language minorities. Like, that's absolutely true. What is still permitted is gerrymandering with the explicit intention of putting the thumb on the scale and altering electoral outcomes. So making it a safe seat for one party or another, which of course has the impact of making people's votes matter less, right? Like, if your legislator knows that they're going to get reelected because they have a safe seat, why are they going to care what you have to say? So yeah, gerrymandering is a huge problem too.
Yeah. We were talking before we came on the air live about the number of voters that vote in an election. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned to you that I saw that in 2016, about 61.5% of eligible voters voted in the federal election. And you said it's usually smaller in the midterms. But I wonder, and you were getting ready to tell me about this, so I'm going to ask you now. I wonder if everybody voted, you know, we have all these red states and blue states, if everybody voted, what is the likelihood we'd have more purple states than just red or blue states?
You know, it could be, but I'm actually going to say something different, which is a problem that relates to gerrymandering. So one of the problems with gerrymandering, specifically partisan gerrymandering, which is what it mostly is. Most gerrymandering is partisan gerrymandering or incumbent protective gerrymandering. When you draw a district so that it is a safe seat for a given party, that means that the most competitive election for that seat is going to be in the primary, right? In the primary. So it is going to be, you know, if you're in a safe, like I live in upstate South Carolina, where most of the districts are safe Republican districts. That's, I mean, and it's because a lot of people here, like, this is very much a red area. There's nothing insidious about that. But, you know, there are other parts of the state and many other places in the country where the safe seats are safe for the Democratic Party. And all parties will gerrymander if they get the opportunity, right? This is not a partisan issue in that sense. But so here in South Carolina, in most of the districts that I vote in, they are pretty much safe Republican seats. So if somebody's going to be a challenger, they're going to challenge in the Republican primary, which does at least two things. One is, as we know, primary voters tend to be the true believers of their party. So they tend to have a more extreme version of the beliefs of their own party. So when you're running in a primary, it suits you to cater to the extremes within your own party. So one thing that it does is gerrymandering leads to hyperpolarization, because most candidates are really speaking to the true believers within their own party, because that's where they need to get elected, is in the primary. The second thing it does, you want to talk about low turnout, primaries. So in primaries, you typically have, 15% turnout, 19% turnout. It's really small. And so what you have, and here's a thing that I was like, oh my gosh, in the South Carolina, I believe it was in 2016, because so many races were decided in the primaries, right? By the time you got to the general election, there was no candidate, because why bother to run if you're in a safe seat for the other party? So because so many elections were decided in the primary, under 9% of South Carolina's voters elected over half of our state legislature.
9% elected over half.
Half.
Wow.
And I know. And the people who are, right, and again, like that 9% are generally speaking the true believers. And bless them. I'm not saying that, you know, for it not to be, but you want to talk about when people should show up. We all need to show up in the primaries.
Yeah.
And fight against gerrymandering so that it doesn't happen that way. Like, that's not the way democracy is supposed to work. 9% of us are not supposed to elect the people who represent us all.
So that leads me to ask you about the League of Women Voters and NAACP, which you're both part of. What are they doing to try and help people vote, encourage people to vote? You know, what are some of the strategies you're using?
So for both the League of Women Voters and the NAACP, our goal is not to tell people how to vote, of course. You know, we're nonpartisan organizations, but it is to encourage people to vote, which is really complicated in a pandemic.
Yes.
Right. So so I'm especially happy to be here on Hey Rumor, where I'm trying to get the word out. But I think there's at least two things. One is the mechanics of voting are more complicated than ideally they would be. So here in South Carolina and in many states, people need to figure out what their voting plan is, right? And that voting plan could be voting absentee by mail or absentee in person, or, you know, but point being, it's not just like rolling off a log easy. You have to kind of figure it out. So one thing we can be doing and are doing is trying to get the information people need about how to effectively make a voting plan, make sure their vote counts. I think the other thing that we can do and are doing is helping people connect the dots about why their vote matters. And one thing that's obvious to me is that we get the most heat and the most light around a presidential election for obvious reasons, right? Like, all of the national media is covering it. And I'm not saying that's not important. I think that's very important. But what I think a lot of people don't know, because life is busy and we can't pay attention to everything, is how important the down ballot races are. Mm-hmm. Here in Greenville County, our county council, for example, is making all kinds of important decisions about development and affordable housing and so many things. And there's a bunch of county council races. So, you know, how many people are aware that they have a county council election in front of them? Not a lot. And I say that not to shame people. I say that to say that's another thing we're trying to do, is get the word out. Like, hey, you've got a lot of elections in front of you. Find out how to research who's competing for your vote, who's going to best represent you, and then how do you make sure you get your vote in so that it counts?
Here's a great question that just came in. And she asks, what's the best way to encourage young people to vote when they are sure their vote won't matter, especially if they have never voted even by 40 years old? What would you help change that mindset?
One thing I would do is I would push back a little bit on the assumption. If you look at voting rates, one thing that you find, it is absolutely true that there are age discrepancies in voting historically, right? And so, you know, sort of if you look at the, I don't know, age 60 plus population compared to the age 18 to 29 population, you know, the 60 plus generation votes at higher rates. P.S. That has always been true, right? It just takes some time. I mean, I don't think it's, I'm a Gen Xer, right? And when my age cohort was 18 to 29, we also voted at lower rates and over, you know, so to some extent, people just sort of grow into voting. Also, out of all population groups who increased their voting rates in 2018, the largest jump was in the 18 to 29 group. So, you know, I think that there's reason to think that a lot of young people actually are motivated to vote. With that said, I'll tell you how I think it is most effective to motivate young people, which is, first of all, to encourage and support youth-led efforts, right? I suspect it is true that, you know, I mean, I am myself the mother of college-age people, and me telling them what to do does not seem to be a very effective But the messages, there's a lot of, Tufts University has an organization, a research project called Circle. And I think one of the most effective things that people can understand, again, is to connect that vote to their own lives. So one thing, whenever I'm talking to young people, one thing that I say is, if you, you know, only you can represent you. So if you look at age cohorts, what you see is older age demographics are more likely to be concerned with issues like Social Security, understandably, right? Like, we all have the things that impact us. Younger people are likely to have different interests, different priorities. Well, if you don't show up and vote those priorities, nobody's going to vote them for you. And so to me, I think that messages like that can be effective. I also think, sorry for being long-winded, but I also think it's helpful for people to understand the ways in which our votes do count. And I think that's in at least two ways. One is, in these local races, we had a race here in Greenville County, a primary for county council that literally tied, and they had to have a runoff, right? But that is not uncommon. Like, on these local levels, and I will emphasize again, these races really matter. The decisions these people make really matter. Your vote counts in a very concrete and direct way, for one. Number two, on the broad scale, I think of our votes as being like a drop of water, in the sense, like, any little drop of water, it's easy to think of it as infinitesimal and meaningless. And individually, that's true. But it's the drops of water that make streams, that make oceans. And finally, if you look at the 2016 election and you look at how many people voted for Hillary Clinton and how many people voted for Donald Trump, a larger group of people did not vote.
Right.
So, you know, to your point of, if we all voted, right? You know, I will bet money that a bunch of those people who did not vote thought, well, my vote just doesn't matter. Well, guess what? Whatever candidate you chose as a group would have won, hands down, landslide.
Yes. And I think the point you made earlier too, about 9% of the voters picked more than half of our state legislature. You know, so you're right, on the local level, it's impacting their roads, their schools, their healthcare, all of that. And then on their state level too, if not on the national level as well. I think all of those were great points. Thank you, Lawson.
Of course.
I did have one question that came in earlier, and that was about if a person had sent in a request for an absentee ballot during the primary, do they need to send in a new one for the general election?
So I'm going to put in my first plug for people to go to the website scvotes.gov. And that's for people in South Carolina. For those of y'all who are not from South Carolina, you can ignore this. But we in South Carolina have a nonpartisan state election commission that has a website that is a treasure trove of information. So And part of what they have is they show you how to apply for an absentee ballot and a way to check up to see if you've already applied for an absentee ballot. So I myself applied for an absentee ballot for the June primary and applied for an absentee ballot for the November election at the same time. Okay. And many other people may have too. It was possible to apply for both. So, you know, you can check and see that. If you're like me, who, like, I applied, but it was a long time ago, and, you know, am I remembering right? But so it's not, I can say this, it is not automatic. And everybody can go to scvotes.gov to check to see, have you already applied for a November absentee ballot? And if not, and if you want to vote by mail, then you can apply there.
So you said vote by mail. I'm confused about this. Is there a difference between voting absentee and what they're making a big deal about, this voting by mail and the fraud and the post office and all of that? Is there a difference between voting by mail and absentee voting?
So it's two separate categories that have an overlap, right? By mail is just a mechanism. It's how are you getting your ballot? Absentee voting, which here in South Carolina, we are in a minority of states that do not have true early voting, which some states do, right? So early voting is just a way to vote in advance of Election Day. In South Carolina, the only way to vote in advance of Election Day is to vote absentee, meaning you're going to be absent on Election Day. And currently, you have to have a reason to vote absentee. We do not have no excuse absentee voting here in South Carolina for the November election yet. We're hoping that the state legislature will permit it as they did in the June primary. We'll see. But so absentee voting just means not voting on Election Day. And there's two ways to do it in South Carolina. One is by mail, one is in person. And we, the League of Women Voters, really strongly support the ability of all voters, you know, in South Carolina, we focus here, but nationally it's everywhere, for voters to vote freely and accessibly by any available means. And here in South Carolina, there are three ways to vote. You can vote absentee by mail, absentee in person, which begins September 28th, and you can vote in person on Election Day. Those are the three ways. Did that answer your question? Because I think it was like sort of what's the difference between by mail and absentee? And the answer is for here in South Carolina, we have two ways to vote absentee, which just means not voting on Election Day. And one of those ways is by mail and one of those ways is in person.
And there are other states where they just automatically send you a ballot, right? You don't even...
There are some states that vote only by mail, right? Yeah. There are some states, which works incredibly well. Like one message that I want to say as often as I can is the story that there is like voter fraud, that there are fraud considerations, it is a fable. There are lots of states that have long histories. We in South Carolina have a lot of experience with absentee voting by mail. I think people should pick the way that works best for them, whether that be voting by mail, voting absentee in person, which begins September 28th, or on Election Day.
And I think also on some of these state voting sites, you can track, like if you choose to mail in your absentee ballot, you can track and make sure that it was received and
And here in South Carolina, you can do that at scvotes.gov. You can track if you put in an application. For those who want to vote by mail, you can apply now. Again, I would suggest going to scvotes.gov or calling your county election office because you have to apply for the ballot first. It's a two-step process. You have to apply for the ballot. And then they're going to mail the ballots out in the last week of September. And you can track it online at scvotes.gov.
So they're going to mail them out the last week of September, but that's also when you can start to vote.
In-person absentee.
Okay. Uh-huh. So in an editorial that you wrote for the Greenville News, Lawson, you mentioned that the executive director of the South Carolina Election Commission expressed some serious concerns about the pandemic's potential impact on the upcoming election. Uh-huh. Will you tell us about some of his concerns and recommendations that were made to the legislature? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So the director of our state, our nonpartisan state election commission is Marcy Andino. And one thing that we're fortunate to have in South Carolina, for those who don't live here, you may not be aware, but South Carolina tends to be at the top of lists of bad things and at the bottom of lists of good things.
We love Greenville. We do love Greenville.
We do. When we love the state, We do. I mean, by the way, to see the bright side of it is lots of room for improvement. nowhere to go but up. Here we go. But one really great thing that we do have is this nonpartisan election commission. And also there is a collection of our county level election officials, all of whom, so Marcy Andino for the election commission and an organization for all of those county level officials, all are urging our state legislature to make this election safe and accessible. We know that lots of people are going to need to vote absentee. And so the kinds of recommendations that all of those experts that we are fortunate to have are making are, One, permit everyone to vote absentee, which means for us, including an excuse that is COVID-19. So, you know, the kinds of excuses that we already have for voting absentee are being age 65 or over, being on vacation on election day. You know, there's a lot of them, but they want to add one that covers all of us, which is pandemic. So that's one request. Other requests have to do with making it go as smoothly as possible. So it includes having ballot drop-off boxes so that for people who receive their ballot by mail but want to be able to drop it off, you know, themselves rather than put it in the mail to go back, you can go drop it off. It includes, because we know there are going to be a lot of absentee ballots received, they're going to need time to count them. And our state laws currently give a very limited window. You know, I think you can't start until election day, I think, but I'd need to go check. But it's, you know, the recommendation is give more time, you know, let them start counting so we can get the results sooner. And others, but all of the recommendations, which are extraordinarily sensible and which I encourage everyone in South Carolina to contact your state legislators to ask them to implement, are measures that sensibly permit all of us to vote without risking our health or our community's health.
And so they did give the pandemic or emergency medical or whatever they called it during the primary.
They did. And it worked really smoothly. Like, we have a great track record of, you know, permitting it. And here's hoping, right? Here's hoping that the state legislature permits it again. They certainly should. But we should all push for it.
Yes. Right. Your state legislators. Mm-hmm. So most, if not all, of the listeners on Hey Boomer, whether they're in South Carolina or not, I would suspect are registered to vote. We are also in that boomer population, and many of us may have been involved at one point in getting out the vote or working at the polls, and now we're hesitant to do that. So besides writing to our legislators and saying expand this opportunity, what are other ways that we can be involved in helping get the word out, helping get young people to vote, making helping people to understand that their votes matter?
Absolutely. That's such a great question. I think for everybody in this pandemic world, one thing that we think is the most effective way to do things is relational organizing. So all of us have existing networks, and I would encourage everybody to mobilize those existing networks to the best of your ability. So, you know, here in Greenville County, just for example, you know, we, the League of Women Voters, and we, a coalition that the League and the NAACP and others are part of, have put together a virtual toolkit. Right? You know, here's how to access online voter registration. Here's how to access paper forms. Here's, you know, an FAQ about how to do voter registration. Here's how to contact us if you need more training. And what we are hoping people will do is, you know, it's a reach one, teach one strategy where we're hoping that people will find the resources that empower them to reach out to the people they know to help them register to vote or check their voter registration, which is also important. A lot of times people move and don't check that it's updated, you know, but so for everyone to empower themselves to go teach others and know where to go for the resources they need to make that happen.
And so the website that I'm showing on the screen now is for South Carolina. Is that where your toolkit is, this virtual toolkit?
So what I would encourage, we don't have it on our, that is our Greenville League website. What I would encourage, and I know you're going to show my email address at some point, what I would actually encourage is for people right now to email me. And I am very happy, like I believe very strongly that democracy is not a spectator sport and that it is crucially important, especially now, but also always, for all of us to use whatever civic power we have to nudge the world in the way that we want it to go. And again, I'm not here to tell people what that means to you, but I want everyone to use whatever power they have to make that happen. So here in Greenville, please get in touch with me. I can connect you with whatever we have available. And the League of Women Voters and also the NAACP are nationwide organizations with local branches in lots of places. So I think for people living in other places, I would encourage you to go to, you know, I mean, if you like I know that the National League website, you know, which is it's if you Google League of Women Voters, you'll find
it. Is it not the first part of this, my.lwv.org?
Oh, you know, I bet that's right. I bet if you go to my.lwv, yes, good point, Wendy. Thank you. Yeah, that'll show you probably like, you know, where are you and find your local league.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's where you'll find some of these tips and about getting involved. And you also have a local Facebook page in case anybody is interested in that too. So some of the reasons that people give for not voting, Lawson, are like we've talked about, the gerrymandering, the restricted voting laws, and, you know, my vote doesn't matter. I hear that one a lot.
Right.
So I know that the league, my mother used to be a member of the league, and I know that the league does a lot about that, but are there other organizations, other places people can go to get more information about what's affecting their states around voting?
That's a good question. And I don't know that I know that there are a lot of organizations that are doing great work just around voting in general. I mean, I can think of vote.org and When We All Vote. You know, there are a lot of really great organizations doing a lot of work. The thing that I guess, one thing that I do hear with people, and I guess the thing that I think is, voting is one way to exercise our civic power. Of course, it's not the only way. It's not the exclusive way. And so for me, I respect everybody's decision about how we feel our civic power is best used, right? And you figure it's like, I think voting is a really important way to do it, but also you can help out with a campaign, you know, find a local candidate. Let me tell you what, these local candidates are operating on a wing and a prayer, you know? Find a local candidate, they will love you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go to, you know, there's all kinds of local things that you can be doing and make a huge difference. I think protesting, right, is a very important way of exercising our civic voice. And in all these things, it's not either or, it's not all or nothing. One thing that I do think about voting, I think there are a lot of systems where it requires a kind of collective belief in order to work. And one of those is money. So money works because we all believe it, right? If all of us start thinking that, you know, a dollar, it doesn't really buy you anything, then it won't. It requires collective belief to work. And I think elections are the same way. And so, you know, one of the most troubling things about this upcoming election for me is the way that there are people who are trying to actively sow seeds of doubt about whether this election is going to be free and fair. And absolutely, you know, we, the League of Women Voters, we, the NAACP, I personally are doing everything in our power to make it true that it is free and fair. And also for it to be free and fair, we have to collectively step in and participate. It's so important.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you talked about earlier, again, with that collective belief is to share with your areas of influence. So like I'm a member of the Rotary Club, you know, so just to make sure that everybody there is registered to vote, I would be surprised if they're not, and that they vote, you know, and
right.
To talk to our families. I don't know what we're gonna do for Thanksgiving or Christmas, but even if you do a Zoom call, you know,
right.
Zoom
right.
turkey, I mean, but be Halloween, you know, all of those times that you might get together with family, which of course Thanksgiving's after the election, but make sure that you talk to them about, and here's another question. So people that have recently moved, most of the registration, I believe, comes in through the DMV. Is that right?
So here in South Carolina, I can't speak to other states, but I know that here in South Carolina, my understanding is it should be the case, but mostly is not the case, that the DMV updates your voter registration information for you. So I would urge everyone, if you have moved, you need to update your information with the DMV first, and then go to scvotes.gov and update your information there. Do not assume that the DMV is automatically updating your information.
And is there a deadline? So if I've recently moved into another state And I want to make sure that I'm registered to vote for this November 3rd primary, primary general election. Is there a deadline that I have to register to vote?
That's a great question. And so election laws are state by state. Every state will have its own answer to that. In South Carolina, the answer is yes. You have to be registered to vote 30 days before the election. So, by the way, this is a great example of the way that something can have a vote suppressive effect, even though it's purportedly neutral. We have a very complicated deadline, which is like it's October 2nd if it's in person, it's October 4th if it's online, it's October 5th if it's postmarked. So just do it before October.
Okay, good points. All right, so we've had some really great comments. Rob says, how is Greenville County handling COVID-19? Well, I think we've kind of talked about some of that with the absentee voting.
Does he mean relating to voting or in general?
No, I believe he means relating to voting. I guess maybe the bigger question is, if there's not enough poll workers, there's a lot of concern about not having as many polling places.
So exactly. So historically, it's true in South Carolina, in Greenville, it's true in a lot of places, that the population of people who serve as poll workers is usually older people. And these are exactly the people who are not comfortable, for very understandable reasons, with serving as poll workers now. So here in South Carolina and in a lot of places, there is a really dramatic shortage of poll workers. I personally and my 21-year-old son both signed up to be poll workers in June for the first time and will be serving again in November. Depending on who your audience is, so two things. One is I encourage everyone who feels safe being a poll worker to consider serving in that role, because there is, to me, two of the most tangible ways to make this election accessible for everyone is to serve as a poll worker or recruit poll workers, and also to vote absentee if you can, because not only are you getting your own vote in, but you're clearing a space in line on election day for somebody else who might not have that opportunity. So I think those are two concrete actions we can potentially take. But so I encourage people who feel safe to serve as poll workers. I encourage everyone, use your networks, encourage the people in your life to serve as poll workers, you know, if they will feel safe and comfortable doing it. And I do want to assure people, again, having served as a poll worker in June, we are doing our best to make it safe for both voters and for poll workers. So there are, you know, the poll that I served at, there were six, you know, it was like going to a store here in Greenville where, you know, like we, the poll workers, are wearing masks. There's plexiglass shields. People have little swabs to go touch the touch screens. We sanitize everything. People are very much thinking about making it as safe as possible, both for voters and for poll workers.
Awesome. I always ask my guests, and you may have just answered this, if there are one or two things that they would like to leave as takeaways for the Hey Boomer audience.
I have two. One is, make a voting plan. If you do one thing today, make a voting plan, figure out what your options are for voting and plan it out now. Because you're much more likely to execute the plan if you've made it. And the second thing I would say is I run into a lot of people who want to do something, which is great. And I also think it's really easy to get overwhelmed with all of the various things that we potentially can do or that need doing, right? I mean, I'm thinking about so many things that we haven't talked about at all today that are, you know, big, huge, massive issues, right? And the thing that I would say to everyone is, if you want to do something, pick the thing that you care about and you think are well suited to do, and then do that and feel really good about yourself, because you should.
Thank you, Lawson. That's great. This has been really helpful. There is one more question that came in, so I guess I'll ask it before we move on. And it is, what about poll watchers? Will they be allowed?
So here in South Carolina, we have two different ways of observing polls. And I'm now digging back to my poll worker training. Poll watchers are actually associated with candidates or with parties. So if you are affiliated with a campaign or with a political party, you can see if, you know, they have a system in place. We also have a concept of poll observers, which is, you know, separate from, it's not campaign related, it's not partisan related. And I could, you know, people can contact me for more information about that. But, you know, that's
okay.
That's-
so I'll show your email one more time. So that's great. Now, if anybody wants to, wasn't able to watch this, you know, some people that think would really benefit from this, please, point them back here to this show. It will still be on the Facebook channel. By the end of the afternoon, it's going to be up live on the Hey Boomer YouTube channel, and it will also be available on Apple Podcast and, Stitcher and Spotify and Google Podcasts and some of your other favorite podcasts. So you can point your friends there if you think they would enjoy this and it would be important for them to hear. I also wanted to remind you that, let's see, here's one more thing. Right, so my guest next week is not gonna be a guest. It's Labor Day. Next Monday is Labor Day. And so I'm taking the day off, and I hope all of you will take the day off, right? And just do a little self-care, because self-care is super important. And that means anything. I mean, it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, do a manicure or pedicure, and you should do those at home anyway. You shouldn't go out. But, you know, do something for yourself or for your home or for your family that would feel good. I do have a guest, though, scheduled for Monday, September 14th, and this guest is Dan Halliburton. He was scheduled last month, and if you all recall, Dan got COVID and was not able to be our guest. So he is coming back September 14th. He's going to be talking to us not only about his work with the Red Cross, but also about what the COVID experience was like. So I think that will be really helpful and interesting, and I'm excited about having him back and that he has recovered so nicely. Also, if you don't want to miss any of the upcoming Hey Boomer episodes, three things you can do. You can follow Hey Boomer's page. You can click on the send email button at the top of the page, and I will send you a reminder email on Mondays. And you can also consider becoming a patron of Hey Boomer, where you can get early access to some of the blogs. You can become part of our community meetings. So take a look at that and see if that is something that you would enjoy doing. I wanted to remind you, as I do every week, that C.S. Lewis said, "You are never too old to set another goal or dream another dream." Thank you for joining me today. Let's continue meeting weekly to learn, dream, and share. And I am so grateful for all of you. And thank you, Lawson.
My pleasure. Thank you.
My name is Wendy Green, and this has been Hey Boomer.